Hello, welcome to the American Pulse. I'm your host, Tony Rezac. This is a show that seeks to listen, express, and amplify the voice of the American people, no matter where you live in this great nation. We are unabashedly pro-humanity, pro-freedom, and pro-America. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, listeners, and thank you for tuning in to the American Pulse. Well, we were all set for this interview, and as fate would have it, we had some tech difficulties from my end and had to postpone. And in the meantime, our beloved brother Charlie Kirk was assassinated, murdered in front of his wife and young daughters. To me, Charlie represented so many wonderful American attributes. He was unbelievably courageous. He inspired and led others. He was a Christian who wore his faith on his sleeve, and he loved America. He loved all of it and could speak of this love with a wonderful blend of articulation, spirit, and humor, and he was a stand for an America that could debate our differences, where both sides were seen and heard. It would be easy for the left to simply demonize him and call him names. This reflexive approach misses the larger context that Charlie and his legacy are pointing to, something my guest today very eloquently expresses. America is hurting right now, by all accounts. Everyone can sense that this nation has entered into a new phase. What will we all choose? What will you choose? Like all entrenched conflicts, the nation is holding a collective trauma. That we have been disconnected and disregarded by our fellow brothers and sisters, by our fellow Americans. Nothing has seemed to heal this divide, and now we have lost one of our bravest and brightest. There is something about this episode today and my guest that stirred something in me, a missing piece that I personally have not been able to quite put my finger on. See if you can see yourselves in today's conversation. And I join you in prayer that America will do her work to clear the skies for ourselves, our children, and future generations. And for Charlie Kirk. Enjoy the conversation. Today's episode is brought to you by the Renton Printery. From huge outdoor banners to small hard hat decals, the Renton Printery produced top quality, customizable, full color decals, business cards, letterhead, envelopes, signs, table tents, and more. The Renton Printery is a small, independent, veteran-owned business since 1957. For all your printing needs, go to www.rentonprintery.com. And now, onto our episode. My guest today is Mark Herr. Mark is a military veteran, the co-author of the book Speaking the Language of Liberty, a family man, and the founder of the Center for Self-Governance, an organization making a huge impact on the way Americans heal and see a better way forward for all of us. Here is my interview with Mark Herr. Okay, I am here with Mark Herr, author and writer and founder of the Center for Self-Governance. Mark Herr, Mark, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
Hey, Tony, thanks for having me on.
We met last year at an event here, right here in King County, and I struck up a conversation with both you and your wife, Pamela. And Pamela has been on Base Camp for Men. We did a great episode on an AI for, that's kind of the first thing I did on AI. But before we really get rolling, I wanted to give you a chance to introduce yourself to the listeners and just tell us maybe a little bit about where you're from, where you grew up. Family, where you live now, and maybe a little bit about what you do for work.
Well, my father was military. I was born in England. He married an English, my English mother. They had a falling out. She put me up for adoption. He found me, kidnapped me. And I can tell you that he's my hero. And that's why I am proud to be an American. I am so thankful that my father kidnapped me and that I am an American. I grew up in South Korea because of his military travels. I spent all of my formative years there. That really had a major impact on my life, seeing a third world country transitioning to first world economy. I spent my entire military career in Tokyo, Japan. I did avionics. I did headquarters command control, and ended up retiring from the military and getting a master's degree in business administration, passing through David Lipscomb University in Tennessee, and then graduating with a master's at Middle Tennessee State University in Tennessee. My political, what we typically understand as politics, began in 2008 when President Bush convinced Congress to bail out the mortgage industry. My master's degree was in business and finance and information technology, and I was taught that those kind of things were Ponzi schemes.
Yeah.
And I was like, that really got my attention, because I was like, wow, that's going to affect the dollar, my purchasing power. I had all these plans, and that was my main reason. But when I went to my first political meeting, Tony, it revolutionized and changed my life, and that is what I'm doing today. It began in March of 2009. I was at a so-called tea party meeting, and everyone was kind of getting to know each other. And it was at that meeting that I realized there was something incredibly wrong with my country where I lived. And I had grown up in all these other places, right? And so here I am in my own country. I didn't really fully understand it because I didn't grow up here. I didn't understand Democrats and Republicans because, again, I didn't grow up here. And I was just in this meeting, and it wasn't my master's degree that came into play. It was my mechanics background, fixing military aircraft. I realized the American people don't understand their system of government, kind of like passengers. You just want the plane to work.
Yep.
But they don't know how the plane works. And that really hit me, Tony, that from that day forward, March 2009. And so I created Center for Self-Governance to learn what self-governance is, how to do it. What is systematic politics? What is it? And how do I do it? I've been doing that for 15 years now. I would not trade it for anything in the world. And here I am now in St. George, Utah, in this state where the tragedy with Charlie Cook took place last week. And I am practicing systematic politics. I'm having to be self-governing today as I wait on the Utah Tech University president. Is he going to agree or not whether we're going to have a summit in his university next week here where the shooter was arrested in the state where Charlie Kirk was assassinated, where our country can find a way to heal, a way to move forward, to marginalize violence so that we can... So that for me, Tony, it's all about, I genuinely mean it when I say I am so thankful my father kidnapped me and I am an American citizen. I can't stress it enough how great a nation this actually is, despite our disagreements, even despite the tragedy last week. It is an amazing country compared to North Korea and other countries that I've been involved in my military career. So that's a little bit about me. Yeah. I love what I do. I wouldn't train it for the world. I hope people are willing to learn self-governance and systematic politics, whether it's through CSG or not. Just it's worth it. It's an incredible adventure to be a human being in the 21st century.
Absolutely. Well, and you share your love of this great nation with Charlie Kirk, who was unabashedly, you know, loved America. And I just love your whole backstory is interesting. Not everyone could say they were kidnapped and brought to America by their father.
I know, right? I know. Yeah.
But and you know, you and I both share a love of language and its distinction. I think most people, it's not to say we're standing above most people's understanding of language, but I think most people, they minimize how powerful language can be, whether it is create, and you've got some great distinctions that we're going to talk about in the book, but that language can really be used to empower and to like inspire. It's so amazing the power to create with language, and it can also be used to your point, it can be a language of captivity. We'll get into the details of that, but my main point is that it can be used, habitual language that's kind of unconscious, let's say, can be used to kind of keep you in a particular rut and you can't see solutions to what's happening because you're using the same language you've always used. And we see that all the time. And I can even own that I can use really inspiring language and sometimes I can use kind of lazy language. It's maybe not the best, you know, for me in certain situations. But I guess my question is, when did you get the language bug where that was maybe going to be one of the centerpieces of what you taught? Was that in grad school? Where did you find where you were like the light bulb went off and you realized, look, how we use language is one of the keys to self-governance?
It was April 2nd, 2010, very specific date. Young Turks Radio, Cenk Uygur, one of the main leaders of that program called Young Turks Radio. And he had my congressman, Steve Cohen. And Steve Cohen was talking about the Tea Party as he said that they had forgotten their white sheets and robes. They were clones of George Wallace. Mm-hmm. This was my congressman. And I'm like, I was in the Tea Party. I was in the meetings. I was there and I was like, you know, I know about the Ku Klux Klan and stuff, but I never been to a meet. I never thought like that. My stepmother's Korean, you know, I mean, you can make all the but I'm white and black and all this stuff. And I was like, what just happened to me?
Yeah.
Literally, it was just such a wake-up call for me. I was like, I just got called a white supremacist on Young Turks Radio, and they got like 1 million followers or something. I'm like, I am toast. And this was my congressman. And I really didn't know what to do, Tony. I was like, how do I handle this? Because am I defensive? No, I'm not. I'm not, it really woke me up to this matter of language and labels. You know, Charlie was labeled a fascist and a Nazi.
Yeah.
And then other people said, well, his language is inflammatory and he deserved to die. So just if you put those two bookends together, for me, it really began on April 2nd, 2010, with that interview with my congressman for my city, because within 2 weeks I had fecal matter on my house, I had a tire slashed, and I was like, man, but I'm not any of these things. I didn't know how to defend myself, Tony. And I started looking back in history, and I realized labels, heretics and witches, 1692 Salem witch trials.
Yep.
Those women had no chance, Tony. Whether you're left or right or whatever you are, the labels, the language and the pictures that we paint literally can cause death.
Yeah.
And in my case, it was just fecal matter. You know what I mean? That's nothing compared to what Erica Kirk is having to go through now and her two kids. I can't imagine what it was like for those women in 1692.
Yeah. You know who they were? They were the herbalists and the naturopathic doctors. They knew stuff that helped people. And that's why, you know, it's just, it's
absurd. Right? Yeah. It's the same pig, different lipstick. It just happens to be the 21st century. And I'm not even complaining about myself. It was just my wake-up call to, like, totally. Language is really important. I really need to spend time understanding language and the difference between what I call the language of liberty and the language of captivity. And how me personally, I'm talking to myself, how do I personally in my daily life navigate that challenging, you know, because there's things we face in our life and we naturally, like gravity, we'll gravitate towards a captive language, you know, a fighting language, a violence language, or there's nothing I can do language.
Us and them, right? Us versus
yes,
them.
Us that's versus captive. Them.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, Tony, there is, and it takes habit practice and long training that we can learn to speak the language of liberty by understanding words and phrases. They don't mean the same thing to different people. So when the left says fascist and Nazi, and when the right hears it, they're not seeing the same picture.
Right.
And so I'm praying that within the next couple of weeks, I can put together a summit where we can start learning as a nation to speak a different language that produces what we actually both want, which is maybe it's not the right term for because some people see liberty as a racist thing. Some people see liberty as a freedom thing. But I hope to bring a different perspective to them in the coming days and weeks.
It'd be great. I mean, I have felt, you know, I was a long time liberal, a traditional Kennedy liberal for like 25 years. I really identified with that side until I didn't anymore. Right. And then I had this kind of transformation that really rocked my friend group, frankly, you know, like people are just like, well, he's gone off the deep end. And I really got to see both silos, for lack of a better word. I got to see, you know, what words meant to the different sides. And I was like, wow. And I felt really, I didn't feel helpless on the left. I felt like I was right. I was on the smarter side. When I was over there, I thought we're all the smart people and the artists over here. We know what's going on. And then when I got to the other side, I was like, wow, I just feel like name called by that whole group over there. That's unfair. Like, you know, like I can't disagree. Otherwise I get all this stuff, you know, I didn't get feces thrown at me, but I got, you know, rhetorical feces, right? It's like,
yes. Yeah. And we're in a nation where we treasured debate, but now we use the term inflammatory as justification for assassination or imprisonment or hate crimes, et cetera. And so learning how to disagree better, Governor Cox, who's really handled this quite well, and I know that he's struggling with the political side and how people understand language, but he's really done a great job of saying, hey, as a nation, we've got to off-ramp the violence and we need to learn how to disagree better. And I think that fits into what Bill Norton, my co-author, and I were trying to figure out. When I got with Bill on writing this book, I told him, I said, listen, I don't think the word liberty means the same as the word freedom. And people tend to mix them together.
Yeah, for sure.
And I said, hey, I just want to really explore it, because he shares a different faith than I do. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, if I could communicate with Bill and learn how people communicate what liberty means, could we identify the difference between the word freedom and liberty and apply that to our language, like as a habit? Mm-hmm. And anyway, so that's how he and I got together, and then we're like, let's put this into a book, and that's eventually what we did.
I'm going to grab a couple of quotes here and read, and then let you comment, because the book is so good. It's called The Language of Liberty, that you co-authored, and you know, you said, quote, our goal should be to find common ground as much as possible. When we cannot agree, we must be willing to let each other alone. Almost without fail, supporting liberty over defending your side of the argument will result in elevating everyone. Differences of opinion must be free from captivity, unquote. I love this. And we're just not there right now. I think you're speaking to it, but you can see that all sides are captive right now to different narratives. So I wanted to give you a chance just to talk about that. It's so beautifully written, and it goes beyond. I know a lot of people that are on the right now, and that there's still the language of captivity, right? I think everyone wants to find the higher ground and the language of liberty, to use your language, but people don't know how to do it.
Yes. So let me unpack this.
Yeah.
So right now you have those celebrating Charlie Kirk's death and those mourning Charlie Kirk's death, mm-hmm. and people in between saying this should have never happened in the first place. And so when we talk about polarization, what we mean is that people have, in their minds, they see a different picture when they hear the same word. And for the language of liberty and the captivity piece right now in the United States, the people on the right who are mourning, they are literally, for them, they are tired of being beat up with, we are Nazis and we are fascist, and nothing we can say is correct or right. Mm-hmm. The people on the left are tired of being oppressed by systems that they think keep them oppressed, whether it's homelessness or whatever their issues are. Mm-hmm. And so the weaponization of the labels, they're trying to achieve an agenda, and they're using people as punching bags. And the people who are the punching bags are getting tired of it.
Yep.
And that's really hard for people when you have an agenda, because it's hard to see the other person, Tony. This is the thing. I'm going to just use an example. You're driving down the road and you see someone with a flat tire. Do you stop or do you say, oh, too bad for them, I got to get... America used to stop for each other.
Yep.
The American people used to stop to help, but now we're scared of each other, right? We're, it's too bad for them. Too bad that happened to you, right? In this case, Charlie Kirk became a symbol for a lot of people who are like, this happened to them now. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Mm-hmm. And for the people on the left, Charlie Kirk is a symbol of oppression to them.
Yeah.
And they can't hear each other. They can't see each other. And that's where the language of captivity, it's like a weed growing in their language. You know, I'm dealing with some Congress people who are Charlie Kirk acolytes.
Yep.
And for them, they don't see the moral equivalence of stopping the weaponization of labels in government for both sides.
Yeah.
And so the language of liberty here is the positive, forward, optimistic. What can I do that's future focused? And in this case, it is really important for the American people to come together who agree that whether you speak inflammatory or not, you don't deserve to die for that.
Yeah.
That's a really important piece of Americans are going to have to answer that question. We have hate speech laws, hate crime laws, thought crime, word crime. There's a guy, Tony, named Greg Burleson, who I don't agree with anything he's ever said. But the FBI got him drunk. They used a fake news crew. And they said, would you kill FBI people? And he's like, he's drunk now, right? Because they got him drunk. And he goes, oh, yeah, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's inflammatory.
Yeah.
They showed this to the jury in the court system, and they convicted him, and he was sentenced by the judge to 68 years in prison in the United States.
Wow.
So think about this in terms of how far do we want to go? Charlie was killed for what he said because it was inflammatory, right? Greg Burleson's in jail for what he said, not for what they did. Right. It's not. And if you compare what Charlie did, he showed up to the university and said, make me think differently. I can't remember the title.
Yeah.
And our language of liberty for both sides, the starting point is, do we end the weaponization of labels first so that we can see each other second? And then hear each other, because we want to be heard first, Tony, and that's the hard part. It's the seeing that always comes first in the human being. We see things first, right? We see the rainbow, or we see the lightning, we see the darkness, or we see the light, and then we talk about it. And for our country to be able to experience the language of liberty, I would argue that it's important that we have to understand the effect of labels, like for those women in 1692, for Charlie Kirk and his now widow Erica in 2025, the Tea Party people, the COINTELPRO, the black communities of the 1960s, it literally goes throughout all of human history, Tony, that the weaponization of labels leads to the language of captivity, and we ultimately will use government as a weapon to harm our opponents in order to advance our agenda.
Well, I love what you said, too. You said, quote, as long as you seek captivity for your political enemies, you will not be able to truly speak the language of liberty, unquote. I mean, that's a call. That's a call for myself, right? I feel like I walk between unity, but I'm more loyal to one side, right? And so I feel like there's a subtle, you know, I have a preference, or maybe my values feel like they don't align with the others. But because of all the name calling, I feel like I just tune out the other side, because it's like, well, you've already decided what I am. I'm like Charlie Kirk in your mind, you know? And so
heretic and a witch.
I may not be calling names to the left the way I did back in the day when I was trying to, you know, I just did a lot of, you know, shit talking back in the day, frankly, you know, and I was like, come on, you know, right. take off your mask, because years after COVID, you're like, come on, what are you guys doing at the grocery store with this? But I've gotten better, but I still feel jettisoned from the left, and even centrist liberals. I don't feel like they really want to talk to me, and I maybe feel a little hurt from all that. So I'm a little bit, over here. Right. I'm like, I'm not calling names, and I'm not calling people stupid, or, you know, wake up. I'm not doing that, but I'm also, I have not known where to go next with it all. Right.
Yes. Yes. That is such a great point. And by the way, thank you for sharing. That's an intimate struggle. And I think most Americans right now, the majority of our country is struggling with this, and such an opportunity for our country moving forward to realize that for the left or for the right, the root struggle is whether or not our system of government works or not. And for many on the left, they believe the system itself is oppressive and needs to be dismantled. That's why you saw with George Floyd, they said, burn the system down. Mm-hmm. And even now with Charlie Kirk, right, coming onto a university where we would think that creative thinking and critical thought and open, rigorous debate was an okay thing, like an embassy, right?
Yeah.
And now that embassy has that embassy and that safe space is now seems disrupted. I think it would be really helpful for both sides to come together and say, okay, in the 21st century, our system of government, right? The people on the right want to keep the system. The people on the left, many of them want to dismantle it or change it. Mm-hmm. If they could come together and have that conversation, what do we keep? What do we dismantle? What mm-hmm. needs to be changed? And how do we advance that in the 21st century? They're using labels in order to advance their agenda. Mm-hmm. of either dismantle, change, or keep. The people on the right are literally tired of being silenced where they can't articulate their ideas about, well, our system is great. Like for me, I would be like, I really appreciate the United States after being kidnapped out of England, considering what my life would have been like.
Totally.
Over
yeah.
in England.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I've learned a lot about the plight of the Indians and the African Americans and the Scottish slaves. And it's mind blowing that those things happened in the country that I love. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And so there are conversations that would be so helpful for both of these sides when it comes to what do we keep? What do we change? What do we dismantle? And can we put the white labels aside? Because now it's just a monopoly of dismantling. Now we're yeah. just using assassination, okay? Or it's just a matter of keeping without any, like what, like the justice system. Just think about President Trump, 2 impeachments, 4 indictments, 6 court cases, 91 charges, 34 convictions, $500 million in fines. He gets a mugshot and 20% of the African-American males vote for him.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So the left and the right are just at this really weird spot, Tony, mm-hmm. in our right now. And it's such a, I gotta be honest, in this tragedy on the other side there, I have political optimism for our nation, predominantly in the area of, can we bring both sides together, not for unity, but how do we bridge the divide between them wanting to dismantle what they think is an oppressive system? Mm-hmm. And the right that wants to keep what they believe is an amazing system.
Right,
they can't
right.
hear each other. And maybe they need to meet at the symbolic Panmunjom, you know, Trump and Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they just need to come to the you know, the treaty place. I'm working on putting a summit together in St. George, Utah in the next week or so. And I can tell you everyone that we're talking to on both sides is wide open to this conversation.
That's great.
Can we bring ourselves out of our language of captivity and into a realm, create an environment where it's safe for us to speak the language of liberty to each other?
I love it. You know, while you were talking, I was thinking, God, it would be so unbelievable, not just for the system of governance, but for the education system. I would love to see both sides come together because one side's really not being represented at all in the education system. And it would be great to see what do we want to dismantle, what do we want to keep, and hear like a really honest debate where all voices are heard, not just top down, you're teaching this, whether you like it or not, right? It's like, I would love to see that represented in the education system. That's a whole nother episode between you and me. But you had said, this is an interesting one. You said, quote, every difference of opinion is not a difference of principle, unquote. And you said, you asked the question, why do we consider people our enemies simply because we disagree with them? And you used the example of the word progressive and how that means different things to different people. I thought that was really interesting. So for conservatives, and this is being really general, it might mean different something for each listener, but for conservatives generally, progressive values, it can mean communism or at least socialism. And it represents kind of the strictest form of captivity for many conservatives and libertarians. But for liberals, and I remember being a progressive liberal, it meant advancing society in compassion, understanding, tolerance. And you could see that progressive values are super important to the left. So one word means something vastly different to your point earlier. Is this a difference of principles, or is this a difference of opinions? What's the distinction there with that?
It's a fantastic question. That quote comes from Thomas Jefferson after he won the presidency, and he was talking about our Republican form of government and that we should work together to keep it and try to differentiate between a difference of opinion versus a principle. So let me give you a tangible related to progressive versus conservative.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Governor Cox and Senator Mike Lee from Utah, where this tragedy took place in the state of Utah, they're both Republicans. And we use that label. They're Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at their opinions, Governor Cox leans more progressive and Senator Lee leans more conservative. And I've literally counseled many parties, D's and R's. You probably want to consider creating a caucus within your parties that allows people to differentiate their opinions about progressive things and conservative things so that they can share the same principle within their party. And that's going to be taking root in a couple of different states. Hopefully now with this tragedy, people are going to be even more open to this distinction, and not as a way of dividing the Republican Party, but allowing them to have differences of opinions on the principle of republicanism or on the principle of democracy in the Democrat Party, allowing them to differentiate between a conservative Democrat and a progressive Democrat, like Tulsi Gabbard and Kamala Harris. Even though they're Democrats, right? One of them has the opinion that's of a progressive nature. The other has the opinions that are of a conservative nature, and allow them to have that space where they could debate their progressive ideas and their conservative ideas within the principle of their party, whether it's Republican or Democrat. Does that make sense?
It does. You know, I'm seeing it here locally, and I know this is true in lots of states, and you're probably seeing it too, is that both the Democrat and the Republican Party, I think some people that don't work in those areas think it's all, everybody agrees. It's just two things. It's the Democrats and their radical left, you know, blah, 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 and the Republicans, and they're all MAGA, pro-Trump. Like, I think people that aren't involved think, you know, it's just these two entities. But I can tell you from being involved locally in the GOP that we have our own language of captivity within the party, and that there's people that are very pro-constitutional republic, and there's people that are more in the center and, you know, more of what's called legacy. And there's name calling. There's, you know, the crazy Trumpsters, or there's name calling, you know, those rhinos or uniparty, or, you know, there's this kind of language of captivity born out of frustration that we don't listen, or we don't fully understand the other side, or we resent the other side because the values or the opinions maybe are different, even though some of the principles are the same. And I don't think we've ever been given the structure or the time or permission to say, can we have something constructive for both sides within this party? Does that make sense?
100%, because we stop again. I'm going to go back to this kind of natural instinct that, you know, my dad owned a 1970 Maverick. And if anybody knows what that is, it's just an old jalopy car. It was super cheap, and the steering wheels would fall off, you know. And the thing that I remember the most about my dad was that he would pull over for anybody that he saw on the side of the road. We didn't have air conditioning, so I'm in Florida, you know, so I'm, and my dad would just
hop on in.
and so that was a major pattern for me about helping other people, regardless of, I didn't know who the person was. I mean, today we're probably afraid, are they going to rob us? Are they going to rape us? Are they going to kidnap? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We have a culture now of captivity. And we don't stop for each other anymore. We don't. And that's just an illustration, Tony, about our culture and where we're at. And I feel like if we could learn to see each other again, and what I mean by that is that we're humans first, kind of like with Charlie Kirk. Did he say inflammatory things? I've never really listened to the guy, to be honest with you. So I don't know. But I know that there's people who are like, what do you mean? And then others who are like, it was inflammatory. I'm so glad he's dead. You know, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
We've literally lost the capacity to pull over for each other when someone has a flat tire. You know what I mean? And I mean, politically, even at our dinner tables, religion and politics, right, is so polarizing that our families are incapable of even sitting down together. So they'll talk about everything else but the elephant or the donkey in the room. No pun intended.
Yeah, I think people, and I can speak for my family too, because there's stark differences in the direction of the country or what's happening, or an event could mean something to my aunt and uncle here, and over here this aunt and uncle feels totally different. I think people, I don't want to say people are conflict avoidant. They are. I think sometimes you're like, well, we see each other three times a year. I don't want to blow up Thanksgiving dinner. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, let's talk about the Seahawks. You know what I mean? Like,
something beautiful, something nice, something funny.
Well, yeah. And let's get along. And we've all kind of been bit by this language of captivity to the point where, I mean,
even that becomes captive, Tony.
Yeah, yeah.
Even that becomes captivity, because in the depths of your heart, you're trying to clear it up. Humans have this desire to clear the skies between each other. I know there's biblical and there's secular versions of forgiving one another. Mm-hmm. But what I mean is that we just have you ever been in a situation where you did something wrong or someone did you something wrong and you never cleared it up and it just lingers?
Yes.
But another example where you were like, and it cleared up and you just felt like the massive weight taken off your shoulder.
Yep.
Okay. America needs that second thing where we clear the sky, where we're able to have a moment where it's like, we're no longer living in captivity, where we're talking, we're meeting each other for 3 days, but we're not actually clearing the sky. It's like not taking care of the cancer in the body or clearing up. Anyway, I could go on for hours on that one. That one's really important for me personally, is like with my wife. Mm-hmm. My wife and I are, we will not let anything linger more than a day.
Mm-hmm.
This has become so important to us in our relationship, is to clear the sky. And what I mean by that is whatever passes through my head that is a seed of bitterness or a question about her intention with me in any way, we clear it up right then and there. And that has revolutionized our relationship. She's with me here in St. George this week. We feel like we're mentoring and ministering to people in the city where the shooter was arrested. And this town, I'm telling you, these people are probably some of the most patriotic people in the United States, is this town, St. George. And now they've just had their whole world crushed, right? This bubble of patriotism in their state. So it's just an honor to be here ministering and mentoring. And then this is a principle, Tony, and I'm sorry for rambling.
No, I love it.
It's so important, this matter of clearing the sky, is that you have, this is the, what I call a self-governance principle. It is really important to reach that level of clearing the sky, that you elevate others' liberty above your personal influence. And I gotta stress this, the love of personal influence and my agenda, my hidden agenda that's not transparent, ultimately can grow between you and me as a human relationship. And literally, I'm going all over the place now. This is my personal belief now. I think it's the seed of divorce, mm-hmm. is when the lack of transparency and an unwillingness to clear the sky, because the hidden agenda becomes a manipulation in the language. that results in growing the fruit of captivity.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
You know, I'm really moved by what you just said, the whole clearing the sky, America can clear the sky. I think that's the piece that people have been missing. I think we've been so frustrated, so hurt by the silos, by the captivity that we've created. I know personally, Mark, like when I left the left because of all the Trump derangement syndrome and all the crazy Marxist stuff that I was seeing happening on the left and being hijacked, I lost probably five or six of the longest friends I've ever had. I'm talking about, you know, the groomsmen at my wedding that were like, oh, he's over there now, and all the name calling on social media, and I've held this desire to clear the air and not really knowing how, all the while holding on to my own captivity and my own hurt feelings by being abandoned by people that have been my closest brothers and sisters for
Yes.
a very long time, and hoping to clear the air and really not knowing quite how to do it, and which is keeping the captivity going. But I'm
Yes.
just when you were riffing about that, something opened up for me where, I mean, clearing the air for America, oh my God, what a gift that would be for the country right now. And then
Oh, yeah.
everybody gets to do their own part. Like I actually get to clear the sky with people that I love, who I've been
Yes.
di disconnected with for years now because of my journey out of the left, through the middle, and over into the libertarian right that started to resonate with me more.
Yeah.
And I've been a little probably philosophically defensive, and my in my own captivity, kind of saying, oh, you know, screw those guys if they don't understand my hero's journey. Then, but just when you were talking about it, I just realized, oh my God, there is an opening there for all of us and for us collectively as a nation.
I just want to echo everything. I don't want to add anything to you said. I just want to echo and say, I amen. I agree, because for me, the greatest experiences in my human life and journey have been when I've cleared the sky and I was restored to someone. And our nation is like a family, and we have a disagreement right now, and it's turning into violence, like the Civil War. And there are some people who have influence needs. They want to dismantle. They don't think this system should be saved. They believe it should be collapsed, and violence at any cost. Any collateral damage is just in defense of eliminating oppression. So I just want to echo what you just said. Clear the sky for the American
But
people, the American family.
love it. I love what you're saying. What a gift it has been to connect with you and talk to you today. Where can people find your work at the Center for Self-Governance? Give us the website, like what you got going on. If you're going to be here in King County, we'll spread the word on that if you don't have the dates and all that. But just where can people find you, your work there, and anything else you'd like our listeners to know before we sign off today?
Well, everything I do is just what is self-governance and how do I do it? That's my journey every single day, this conversation. How do I self-govern? What is it? Center for Self-Governance is that organization. That's where we house that research. We have classes and training. I just consider myself a student and not an instructor, a mentor to help people. This is where I'm at in my journey. So if they're interested in that, what is it and how do I do it? How do I speak the language of liberty? Join us in our research journey, adventure at centerforselfgovernance.com to learn more. And there's more to it. We have other organizations that have now been created out of that. I'm here in St. George. One of my students, he's a CEO of Balance of Nature. He has founded the Liberty Village. They just opened yesterday. United We Pledge, he's created, just as some examples. Even my co-author now, Bill Norton, is working for Liberty Village as their education curriculum. It's just so there's just we're doing a lot of things, Tony. But Center for Self-Governance, the Center for Self-Governance, is kind of the starting point in their journey. And then empowering people to learn to sow the seeds of liberty and grow them wherever they are and whatever they're doing.
I love it, Mark. Thank you so much for coming on the shows today. Really appreciate your time, your insight, and your resources. Just love the work you're doing. Thank you so much today.
Thanks for having us on, Tony, and I look forward to seeing you when we come to King County in a couple of weeks. It's being headed up by Steve and Kevin McCoy, brothers who are just the same. They want to know what liberty is and how to do it. And we'll be having an event out there, so I hope your audience will stay tuned and be willing to participate.
Beautiful.
I felt really inspired by this conversation and was moved by Mark's mission and his language. You can find him at www.centerforselfgovernance.com with all sorts of great classes and workshops. And Mark and the Center for Self-Governance will be right here in King County on Saturday, September 27th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at a place called the Claw of Enumclaw, right down in Enumclaw. The suggested donation is only $20. It's also suggested that you bring a laptop. Sounds like an awesome day, so go get yourself some new tools for the important next chapters in our great nation. Thank you, listeners, and we'll see you next time on The American Pulse.